having all the power and the children and the child being powerless. I don't think it's that at all.
Okay, well, I should probably get on to, you know, the sort of more general questions. I had one from a reader, actually, from one of my blog readers, that she wanted me to ask. She said, "Oh my God, Preeta is my favourite new writer. Please, please ask her about her plans for the future. When is the new book coming? What will it be about?"
The new book, it's coming. I'm actually, as we speak, trying to finish up my first draft of it, and hopefully I'm going to finish a first decent draft in the next few days.
Okay.
But I don't know when. I mean, I only had a contract for one book, so it's not, you know, I still have to go through the whole process of having my agent read it, and then she'll try to sell it. So who knows when it'll come out. And I'm sure that I'm going to have to do some major revisions anyway after this first draft. But it's set in Malaysia as well, and it's the story of a man who grew up, whose father founded a cult, and who grew up in the cult, and then he's now an adult, and he's sort of remembering telling the story. And it's very different from Evening is the Whole Day in some ways, because it's told from the first person point of view. It's the person himself telling the story, and so it's not. I think the language is pretty different, more sort of spoken Malaysian English almost.
That's interesting, because I've read a couple of your short stories where you do that. You did the whole story in Malaysian
English.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's something that I'm playing around more and more with now, and kind of trying to tell the story in a more, I don't want to use the word authentically because it's so charged and everyone overuses it, but sort of a more Malaysian voice to begin with, to tell the story in a voice that Malaysian people would use. So that's something that I'm experimenting with this next novel.
Well, I found that one of the things I wanted to, I didn't get time in the book, was about the dialogue, which was very, I just found I could really hear the rhythms of Malaysian English, which I'm not familiar with at all, but you really communicated that well. And I don't know, is that something that was easy for you, or that it took a lot of work to actually get that?
No, that is actually easy for me, and I almost feel guilty writing this new novel. It's something that, I mean, it's come so easily that I feel, well, shouldn't this be harder, shouldn't this be more work? But it is. I mean, I grew up in Malaysia, and I'd only left really at the end of my teens, and I go back once or twice a year, and so it's really, I mean, it is really what I grew up speaking, and it's kind of hard to get into the whole issue, but basically, I think that in countries that have like their own versions of English, or it can be another language. I suppose in Algeria you talk about their own version of French, but let's stick with English for the purposes of our discussion. In countries that have their own version of English, I think the local English manages to say things or to capture things about the culture that standard English doesn't. Like there are all these nuances or connotations underneath the words that are being said that if you were to sort of translate the whole thing into standard English would be lost.
Right.
So that's a big reason for me to try to work with the way that Malaysian people actually speak.
No, that makes sense, because I mean language is kind of is an expression of so much of a culture. You know, so I mean, you must develop your own words, your own phrases, your own, your ways of saying things.
Yeah, it shows up, it shows up to the surface all of the preoccupations of the culture, the things that are important or the things that are sort of that people are obsessed with. And,
that's fascinating. Do you think you'll? I mean, it's interesting to me that you grew up in Malaysia, but you've also lived in America and in France and. Do you think you'll always write about Malaysia, or do you think you might write about USA or France one day, or other places?
I'm not sure. I mean, it's for the moment, I don't have any interest in writing about any other place. I mean, I don't know. I'm still, I still have hopefully a lot of years ahead of me.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I wouldn't say like I wouldn't rule out ever writing about another place. I don't know about forever, but for now, it's true that I don't actually have so much of an interest in writing about other places. And I did at one point. Try to write about America, and it just was, it just felt completely flat and uninteresting even to me. So, that's a terrible sign, because if you as a writer are not interested in it, it's pretty much guaranteed that no one else is going to find it interesting either. So, maybe at some point I'll find some, you know, I'll be burning with the desire to write about America, and then at that point I will. But I think if you don't really want to, and if you don't feel sort of this urgency, then you shouldn't push yourself to write
about
a place.
Yeah. I mean, I lived in America for 6 years, but I never, you know, I always found myself going back to writing about England. And, you know, maybe it is that, you know, so many of your sort of formative experiences are there, and you just got a lot to write about. And
That's right.
I won't hold it to you if you when you hold you to it if you want to write about America one day. What else? I was wondering about. I read somewhere that you went to France to help run a B&B. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Technically, yes. When we first came to France, that was in 2006, and we came because we had some friends who were running a B&B, and I had just finished my master's in the U.S. and we wanted to do something else, something different. And I especially wanted to just get out of America for at least for a little while, and so this sort of popped up, and our friends invited us, and so that's how we ended up in France. But we did that only for a year, and then they sold the B&B, and we sort of parted ways, but we decided that since we were already here and we'd already gone through all the paperwork to be in France, we were just going to stay for now. So here we are.
But because your original thesis was on gypsy music festivals in France.
Yes, I didn't. I mean, my original. I didn't actually finish it.
Oh yeah, because
but that's
you,
what I was
yeah.
working that's on. Yes, I was working on a doctorate, and it would have been in. Ethnomusicology, and yes, it was about gypsy music festivals.
Sounds fascinating. Is it something you think you might ever go back to? I mean, not as a thesis, but
just
to write a book about?
No, not really, actually. Okay. I have no intention. I mean, I think it's again a very interesting topic, and I really hope someone else does it.
But not you.
It's not going to be me. No.
Okay.
No.
Could you talk a bit about, because I know some of the readers of my blog are aspiring writers, and I think it helps to hear stories of how other people got published. So could you talk a bit about how you went from being a creative writing student to actually getting a publishing deal?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I can talk about, I didn't become a creative writing student until I had almost a full draft of this novel. So that's something to begin with. I think it really helped me, at least, to go in with an idea of what I was working on and what I wanted to do, and sort of to have those years of work behind me so that I had confidence and I had faith in my own seriousness as a writer. You know, do you know what I mean? I think a lot of people, at least in the US, I don't know if this is the case in the UK, but in the US a lot of people sort of drift into creative writing programs because they do like to write and they have some talent, but they're not completely sure yet. And that's another way, to do it. And I'm not saying that, you know, you can't ever come to anything if you go about it that way, but I think for me it helps that I did have this very concrete thing that I was working on, and that I was, you know, sort of able to, like, I was handing in chapters of my novel in workshop and sort of had this goal at the end that I didn't lose sight of. So first of all that was my case, and then I think being in a creative writing program, and this I think is true in the UK as well, that if you're in a master's program, then, you know, you do have some opportunities to meet or to talk with agents and editors. And so my agent was someone who visited the master's program while I was a student there.
Okay.
And since I had already finished at that point, finished all but a couple of chapters of the novel, I just gave her almost the full manuscript and signed with her. And then that was after my first year, and it was a 2-year master's. So at the end of the second year, I already, you know, had an agent, and I had finished the book, and she sent it out, and It sold pretty quickly, actually, and within a couple of weeks. So I don't know. I mean, there's so many. It's one of these things where I think luck plays into it much more than any other factor. But it was probably a good time to be trying to sell the novel about Indians in Malaysia, and also it was before, you know, the whole publishing crisis, and so it happened pretty quickly for me. And
that's great. It's a very good book, as you know. I mean, if you read the reviews, it's been very well received. So, I don't think it was entirely about luck, but
luck always plays a part. It's just that I do know, you know, I have to say that I do know lots of incredibly talented writers for whom it takes a long time, and so I would, you know, I would make that clear as well to aspiring writers or to students. I would make that clear as well, that you can be really good and really talented and really hardworking, and it can still take a lot of time, and it still does take some luck.
So
not to sort of lose faith or to think, well, I must not be that good if it's not being bought, because it's not always true.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's what I always used to tell myself. I got so much time, You know, so if I just, it may not happen today or this year or 10 years from now, but
Exactly,
if you keep writing, it's going to happen one day. If you're
exactly.
good enough, you get the break. So,
Well,
one other thing I wanted to ask about, I know we're sort of running out of time, it's more over half an hour, but just one more thing is that, you know, Western readers often have a sort of particular idea of what they, if, you know, particular expectation of a book by an Asian writer. You know, sort of oriental, like a exotic experience kind of thing. And I can't,
Sure.
it's hard to imagine for me what it's like to, you know, to write for an audience that has that kind of idea of, you know, like an idea of who they want you to be before they've even picked up the book. I mean, does it affect you as you're writing? Is it something you think about, or?
No, I try my best not to think about it. And it was very easy not to think about it when I was working on the first book, but now that I'm working on a second one and I've had some, you know, I've sort of read the response both from outside Malaysia and within Malaysia. So, of course, that's in my head. Like, what have people said about the first one? It tends to pop into my head anyway, whether I want it to or not. But I'd really try my best not to think about it. And I really try very, very, very hard to write for a Malaysian audience. Because I believe that the kind of Western or non-Malaysian reader whom I want to reach with my book is actually the kind of reader who would appreciate that it's not written for them. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the kind of person who would appreciate that there are things that they can't understand, that they're being sort of dropped into a culture without much explanation. And I know that there are readers out there who like that, and it's for them that I'm writing as well as for Malaysians. And I think, I mean, by and large, people in Malaysia who've read this book have said that in that respect it did succeed, that they felt that it was speaking to them and that it was, you know, a fair representation of Malaysia, and that it wasn't trying to sort of over-explain or sort of, you know, take the hand of a white Western person and guide them through Malaysia with sort of this tour guide tone. So I hope that I'll be able to do that again for the second book. I think, I mean, in general, if you're writing for an audience that's not your own, you know, like I'm from Malaysia, and most of the people who read me, but in terms of the actual numbers, most of the people are not going to be Malaysian. So I think if you're a writer who's writing for an audience composed of people mostly not like you or not where you've come from, I think you really just have to try not to think of that too much and not to go out of your way to say, this is my culture and I'm going to explain it to you.
Right.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense. I was going to ask about the... I think the book's been published in quite a few different countries and been translated into different languages. Is that something you get involved with the different editions, the different international editions, or do you just sort of leave that to...
Yeah, it really depends very much on the country in question. So I've not been involved much with most of them. When it came out in Italy, I was somewhat involved. I went to Italy and I went to a festival there, to the Turin Book Fair, and spoke with an interpreter. Now, but the one exception is it's just come out in France. The French translation took a very long time, so it's just come out now in February. And with the French translation and with promoting the book in France, I've been very, very, very involved, like immensely involved, because I live here, so it's easy
sense.
For me to travel to all these events, and also because for once I speak the language, so I can actually go to these festivals and speak in a language that people understand directly without my needing an interpreter. So that makes a huge difference, and that's why, you know, I can't be involved with like the Hebrew translation or the Portuguese translation, because there's only so much. I mean, it's not very interesting to have a writer show up and it's really just their face and they can't really interact with the audience at all. There's not really any benefit to either the publisher or the writer or the audience to pay for that. But in France, I have been for a change involved, and it's really interesting actually to see sort of the different literary cultures in different places and how people read and what they look for and what they think, how they think about fiction. So it's been an interesting experience to be involved in France.
Yeah, that was what I was interested in, is like how, I mean, either how if the book has been sort of promoted differently in different places, or if people have read it differently or have got different things from it.
Yeah, I mean, I think without getting into it too much, or if I had to summarize it, I would say that in Anglophone cultures, like in the UK and in the US, multiculturalism has a much... ordinary people on the street are just much more used to multiculturalism as an idea, as a fact of life. And in France, although it's not that France doesn't have other cultures, it's not that it's not diverse at all, because of course there are lots of North Africans living here and lots of Africans, but it's just a different way of thinking about the rest of the world, actually, in a different way of approaching. It's sort of more things that in the UK or the US people would immediately recognize as, you know, oh, we shouldn't do that because that's objectifying the writer, that's exoticizing that country too much.
Right.
Those are not really, like, I feel that France hasn't really reached the stage of saying, oh, well, maybe... just because you're of Indian descent, for example, it doesn't mean that, you know, I'm going to stand up and shout namaste to you from across the room. Because
I know, yeah, so it's a sort of different level of consciousness.
You know what I mean? It's sort of a slightly less aware of the subtle distinctions or the fine distinctions between between different cultures. To them, it's sort of, there's France and then there's Asia.
Right. Yeah.
So,
okay. I think that was that. Well, I have more questions, but I think that's probably enough for the interview. So thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh, no problem. Thank you very much for giving my novel space. I had one question actually for you, if you don't mind my asking. It's very, it's just going to be very quick. I wondered where did you hear about my novel? How did you end up reading it? Where did you find it?
I heard about it in several different places. I tend to kind of, you know, I kind of read a lot of, you know, blogs or, you know, literary reviews and that sort of thing. And I heard it recommended, I think I saw a newspaper review and I sort of thought, oh, okay, well, maybe. And then I read another review and I thought, you know, so it was one of the things, it wasn't a particular place, but I heard several different people recommend it. And so it was sort of a cumulative thing. That tends to be how I come across books. I sort of, because you see so many recommendations in so many different places.
Yes. Yeah,
and,
exactly.
If I see the same one cropping up again and again, I sort of think, okay, well, I guess I'll give it a try.
Right.
And I'm glad I did.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it was an excellent book, so.
Thank you. And thank you very much for calling and giving me space and time on your blog.